Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that this program contains the names and voices of people who have died.
Joseph Blair's numb as he walks out of the fluorescent lights of the Brisbane City Watch House and into the arms of his mates.
That's all they went for me. Then we went back to my dad's. Then we just like sat around, couldn't sleep, just talking about it, what happened.
Joseph's fearing the worst, but he's hoping for the best. He keeps thinking about the last words he said to Daniel.
Well, I sort of had a feeling, you know, because like I was talking to him and he wasn't responding back, and grabbing his hand, I was saying, just let me know, brother, just squeeze my hand, but no. Sort of the things I was saying to him in the back of the paddy wagon when I was with him. When I told the boys, I said, he's gone, brother. I said, he ain't coming back, man. I didn't, like, take it too well either. They just, like, comforted me and just... And they said, it's not your fault, brother. It's nothing you can do. I said, yeah, I know.
At the same time, Sam Watson, the gruff lifelong activist and CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service, was trying to get some answers from the police. I recorded this interview with Sam last year, before he sadly passed away.
All we could ascertain was that they'd gone down to go swimming at the lagoon in South Bank, but the white security had hunted the group. So the boys moved from South Bank up to Musgrave Park, and they noticed a marked police car circling the area and paying particular attention to them.
When the police tell Sam that Daniel is dead, he's immediately concerned they aren't treating this as an Aboriginal death in custody.
They said that he'd been declared dead at the Royal Brisbane Hospital, so we're all very shaken, very upset. The police who were talking to us kept on hammering the theme that this is not a death in custody because Daniel had been declared life extinct at the hospital and therefore he was not in police custody. It's a whole lot of rubbish, a whole lot of garbage.
The news of Daniel's death spreads pretty quickly throughout the state, moving like an electrical current from community to community. And come morning, most of the blackfellas in Queensland are angry and upset, but they're not surprised. Sadly, deaths in custody are not uncommon. But this time, something was different. And this time, people weren't going to stay quiet.
Justice has been done, and why shouldn't people know better?
Just want justice for our brother, or maybe stop stuff like this from happening again.
There was something going on there, and I made a point of just witnessing and sort of being overtly a witness to what was going on.
You know what the main theme over in America is, Black Lives Matter. Why shouldn't it matter here too?
What do we want? Justice!
I'm Alan Clark, and this is Thin Black Line, a podcast about the arrest and death of 18-year-old Daniel Yock in Brisbane in 1993. In this episode, blood is spilt as community members and police go toe-to-toe, and a controversial government watchdog is given the job of investigating the death. If you haven't listened to episodes 1 and 2, I suggest you start from there. The Brisbane City Police Watch House, an imposing slate-coloured building that used to be smack bang in the middle of the city. Today, it's a gym full of 20-something professionals sweating it out in expensive activewear. But you can still see the original building's car park, the exact spot where Daniel was placed on the asphalt 27 years ago.
It's still got the shape of like of a watch house, because on each side of the driveway there's massive fences. And so the shape looks like it was meant to keep people in, you know, that you couldn't get out of it.
It was used to process and hold people who'd been arrested. I visited the spot at night. It's a lonely part of the city. Devoid of traffic and people, it's in a deserted narrow street. Flooded in dull yellow office lighting, hemmed in by skyscrapers. Sam remembered how lonely it felt there the night of Daniel's death. He was also alarmed that the police had decided not to treat what had happened as a death in custody.
The cops showed no concern for this group of very upset, very agitated Aboriginal people. They gave us no information. We opened up the office, and I know that the lawyers are very cautious about taking statements from the other young dancers, because they didn't want to set up a situation where there were inconsistencies in any of the testimonies, because they'd been through an enormous amount. And by that time, we'd be able to confirm that, Daniel was dead. So we were trying to assist them to work their way through that, to process what was happening.
The police say they had no reason to be worried about the 18-year-old when he was in the back of the paddy wagon. Looking back, Joseph, who was actually in the paddy wagon with Daniel, believes his mate was dead before getting to the watch house. And remember, it was Joseph who frantically told the police Daniel wasn't breathing when they actually arrived at the watch house, which then led to the commencement of CPR. Either way, a doctor called life extinct at Royal Brisbane Hospital. So the police are standing firm that this is not a death in custody. Sam and the ALS argue the opposite. Daniel was arrested, handcuffed, and placed in a police paddy wagon, and was either in the final stages of dying or was in fact dead before being placed into an ambulance. For Sam, alarm bells were ringing.
Eddie Murray was found dead in this police lockup at Wee War in 1981 after being arrested for drunkenness.
Mr. Mick Lee, whose 16-year-old son John Pat was found dead in a cell at Roebourne Police Station, says white man's law has failed. Meanwhile, the acquitted police officers say they're relieved and looking forward to getting back to work.
28-year-old Lloyd Boney was found hanging by a football sock in this cell on Thursday evening. He'd been arrested only 90 minutes earlier on a breach of bail charge. Boney's family is convinced it wasn't suicide.
He said if he wanted to take his life, he'd have took it out in the open, you know, where there's trees and...
Back in the 90s, the issue of black deaths in custody was front page news. There'd been a full-blown royal commission into why Aboriginal people were 23 times more likely to die in police custody or jail. The Royal Commission's final report was released just 2 years prior to Daniel's death in 1991. It was a scathing indictment on the Australian judicial system, finding widespread institutionalised racism. Queensland was singled out as a state that consistently failed in its duty of care towards Indigenous people. The Commission handed down 339 recommendations for state and territory governments to implement to reduce the numbers of deaths. Sadly, though, since then, the number of black deaths in custody has exceeded the number of recommendations. The day after Daniel's death, Lionel, Daniel's big brother, got a call from his sister in Brisbane telling him something big was going to happen.
I remember the painful way as she said, "You best come and down because we need your leadership. And I can hear all the Murray workers were saying, we need you down here to help lead us with this situation." I felt, I wouldn't say angry at that time. I felt that worried and confused about what was really happening.
Lionel got into his car and made the four-hour trip from Cherbourg to Brisbane. When he gets there, he meets up with the other boys who were with Daniel in his last few hours.
They looked like they were in fear of their own lives. They looked like they were struck by something that taken away from them, you know, like they lost a soul. And they didn't look sad, they looked very emotionally wrecked, and I wouldn't even say angry at that time, right? They looked emotionally wrecked.
From there, Lionel heads to a community meeting organised by Sam and the Aboriginal Legal Service. There's at least 200 Murrays there and a growing group of journalists.
Daniel said a gentle way about him. He's not a hardcore criminal. You know, this is Daniel, just a lovely young Murray kid who loved his culture, loved his dancing, and very close to family and communities. So we knew that there was going to be a big reaction. So we spent some time there at the legal service office trying to work out a strategy, and it was decided that we'd let the lawyers continue to try to hammer from the police service what information they could, and we decided to have a community meeting at the Murray Mura building, which was a community owned building at Cordelia Street, South Brisbane.
I think that the vibes in the community at the time was they wanted to find out what really happened. Not everyone knew what really happened. I didn't know what really happened, but we knew that something happened with the police, you know?
No one's satisfied with the information from the police. Frustrated, they decide to march.
A decision was made to go across to police headquarters.
On behalf of my family, I say that we charge the six officers and we charge the whole goddamn legal system!
So we moved onto the street at around 11, 12 o'clock, very angry, very angry. And the cops were taken completely by surprise. We marched from there straight down Melbourne Street, George Street, and then we made to the front of the Queensland Police Service in Roman Street.
The crowd marched for 2 kilometres. Media reports at the time estimate around 500 police officers surrounded the building. Joseph and the rest of the boys are in the crowd. Now they're standing face to face with the police, despite fears that they'll be arrested. And remember, Daniel and Joseph were the only ones caught. The rest hid while police had searched for them. They didn't have to march, but they wanted to. They felt like it was the right thing to do. The crowd blocked the street in front of the police headquarters. In pictures, you can see a line of black faces staring down a line of police officers.
We had a PA system and we wanted to storm into the police headquarters. The coppers said they would meet a delegation. Daniel's older brother, Lionel, was there by that time, so a small group of us went into the reception area of the police headquarters, met with the acting police commissioner. They were very nervous, very tense. Of course, had a large number of blacks outside Raymond Street, and I said a great high level of anger.
The acting police commissioner told Sam and Lionel that there would be a Criminal Justice Commission investigation, known as the CJC.
And the coppers said that they'd just been told that there was going to be an urgent CJC inquiry into what had happened, and they wanted us to clear the area. So I came back out to tell the people who were there of that decision.
Now defunct, the CJC was Queensland's first attempt at a truly independent government watchdog. It was set up in 1989 to look into claims of misconduct and corruption in the public sector, including the police force. It was a direct result of the damning Fitzgerald inquiry.
Sparked by the media, the Fitzgerald Commission has been hailed as Australia's most successful inquiry into corruption. In July last year, Tony Fitzgerald QC started hearing routine evidence about Queensland's flourishing vice industry, despite years of denials from the Bjelke-Petersen government that it even existed. But the breakthrough came when senior officers swapped admissions of guilt for indemnities from prosecution. Much of their testimony pointed the finger at Police Commissioner Sir Terence Lewis. There were serious allegations against the judiciary. Politicians also were not immune, and Premier Mike Ahern said the inquiry was central to his overthrow of Sir Joh Bjelke-Petersen.
Not to worry about, it's okay.
Ultimately, it will be up to the government to act on his recommendations to complete the cleansing process that's been the Fitzgerald Inquiry.
The Fitzgerald Inquiry had been blunt. From the top to the bottom, the thin blue line was rotten with dodgy cops on the take. And there's a lot more to say about the CJC and its investigation into Daniel's death, but I'll get to that in later episodes. At this point, just know that the Aboriginal community had little faith in the CJC. Lionel and Sam walk out of their meeting with police into the crowd. Tensions are high. To dismiss them as an angry mob of blackfellas would be cheap and easy. They might not know Daniel personally, but they've all been touched by a death in custody, whether it's a relative or a friend. Across the road from the police headquarters is Roma Street Station, Brisbane's main transport hub. From the air, it's a large grey artery of veiny train tracks running north to south. From the street, it's a large building with a multi-level car park on top. As they walk past Roma Street Station, a full can of soft drink is hurled into the crowd from above, almost hitting a child.
Threw a can, full can, from the top of the car park, Roma Street. Nearly hit one of the kids, one of the babies.
Joseph watched it all unfold. The blokes that threw the can are spotted.
Like they try to disguise themselves, but blend in with the people. But a couple of the young people spotted them and pointed them out. And when they said, that's them there, that's when everyone just rushed them. As they ran through the crowd, that's when all hell broke loose and there's people smacking them here, people smacking them there. I didn't want to get involved, I just sat there. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been looking good for Daniel.
Sam Watson also sees the men.
We're never able to confirm just who they were. But one of these guys, they were walking from the transit centre towards the front entrance of the police headquarters. And one of these guys threw a can of coke or something at some of our kids. That just, the whole thing just erupted.
I have to say the footage is intense. Right there on video, young black men unleash years of built-up frustrations at being targeted and harassed on a daily basis.
There were clashes on Roma Street, clashes inside the baggage area. They brought a police dog in, but the police dog didn't want anything to do with the black force.
Everyone was going off everywhere. And so when they was fighting with the police, the elders in that community was holding me back. And you can see it in some of the photos where they hold me up, because I wanted to really get involved with it myself. I'm an action person too. I wanted when anything like that happened, I felt so adrenaline up, I wanted to cause a little bit of physical trouble too when it was happening. But I was held back by some of the elders.
Sam, Lionel and Joseph are adamant that the trouble was started by undercover or off-duty police officers who threw the can. It's a claim they stand by today. It's important to point out that there's no proof of this, and the Queensland Police strenuously deny the allegations.
None of our mob were hurt. A few police officers did get knocked around. So senior cops said, look, get control of your mob. Get them out of here. We won't arrest anybody. Just clear the area.
Remarkably, no one's arrested. For a community who feel powerless, Daniel's death has become a call to action. In the next episode of Thin Black Line, we explore the broken relationship between the young Murray community and the Queensland Police back in the 90s.
A lot of the kids were conditioned just to run from the police because they'd get picked up and they didn't know why. And then the police would chase them because they think they must be running away for some reason, you know, and it went on.
The Aboriginal Legal Service says three children aged 12 to 14 were stopped by six police officers in the Valley Mall early last Tuesday.
They explained to me that the coppers took them out to Finkenbar.
A spokesman for the police commissioner says he is aware of the allegations, but that he won't comment until all the facts are known.
They told us to take our clothes off. We said no, and they said take our shoes off.
I was thinking, what's going on? Where did you come from, my baby?